condition by his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. Since the material body is sure to be vanquished and the duration of one's life is not fixed, neither death nor life is to be paid. Rather, one should observe the eternal time factor in which the living entity manifests himself and disappears. Please repeat after me. Since the material body is sure to be vanquished and the duration of one's life is not fixed, neither death nor life is to be praised. Rather, one should observe the eternal time factor in which the living entity manifests himself and disappears. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The living entities in the material world, not only at the present but also in the past, have been involved in trying to solve the problems of birth and death. Some stress death and point to the illusory existence of everything material, whereas others stress life, trying to preserve it perpetually and enjoy it to the best of their ability. Both of them are fools and rascals. It is advised that one observe the eternal time factor, which is the cause of the material body's appearance and disappearance, and that one observe the living entity's entanglement in this time factor. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur therefore sings in his Gitavali, Anadi karma phale poribhavar navajale toribare nadekhi upay. One should observe the activities of eternal time, which is the cause of birth and death. Before the creation of the present millennium, the living entities were under the influence of the time factor, and within the time factor, the material world comes into existence and is again annihilated, bhutva bhutva pralayate. Being under the control of the time factor, the living entities appear and die life after life. This time factor is the impersonal representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who gives the living entities conditioned by material nature a chance to emerge from this nature by surrendering to Him. Navhi nandet dhruvam mrittum adhruvam vasya jivitam kalam param pratikshetam bhutanam prabhavapayam. Since the material body is sure to be vanquished and the duration of one's life is not fixed, neither death nor life is to be praised. Rather, one should observe the eternal time factor in which the living entity manifests himself and disappears. Om Ajnanati Nirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtham Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamaitam Dadati Swapadantikam Bande Aham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Shagrajatam Sahaganam Raghunathanitam Tvam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sabudhutam Purijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhanitam Sucha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanusute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhascha Kripa Sindhu Bhaye Vacha Patitanam Pavanibho Vaishnavibho Namo. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vaishnavi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare So this chapter is entitled as The Behavior of a Perfect Person. Narad Muni is advising Yudhishthir Maharaj. Previously, Narad Muni explained the different varnas, the four varnas. The perfect society, he first described the four social order, and then he described about four perfect stages of life, that is, four varnas and four ashrams. And then he is describing the behavior of a perfect person. Now, who is a perfect person? Perfect person means a pure devotee of the Lord. The perfection is in becoming a devotee of the Supreme Personality of God. Actually, perfection means to become situated in one's constitutional position. And what is the constitutional position of a living entity? The constitutional position of a living entity is that he is a spirit soul. And what is the nature of the spirit soul? What is the basic characteristic of the spirit soul? The basic characteristic of the spirit soul is that he is the eternal servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And to become a servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead means to become a pure devotee of the Lord. When one realizes perfectly well that his situation is that of a Supreme Personality, the servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that is perfection. Now, before one comes to that constitutional position of becoming a pure devotee of the Lord or pure servant of the Lord, one has to first of all realize his identity as a spiritual being. As long as one identifies himself with his material body, he tends to try to exploit this material. That is a natural phenomenon. If a living entity, or as long as a living entity considers that he is his body, he is bound to try to exploit this material nature. Exploit this material nature means try to use the resources of the material nature for his sense gratification. To think that one's identity is physical body means to think that his senses are the ultimate consideration. And the gratification of his senses, enjoyment for his senses, is the ultimate goal of life. And how does one gratify his senses? By utilizing the resources of the material nature for his enjoyment. And that is called material bondage, or the conditioning of a living entity. This material nature is Krishna's arrangement for a living entity to try, for a conditioned living entity, for a living entity who has rejected Krishna, to try to enjoy like Krishna. Actually, what Krishna is in the spiritual sky, a living entity wants to be that in the material nature. In the spiritual sky, everything is meant for Krishna's enjoyment, and Krishna is the supreme controller. Similarly, in the material nature, a living entity, a tiny little spark of spiritual consciousness, tries to be Krishna, what Krishna is in the spiritual sky. That is, tries to be the supreme enjoyer and the supreme controller. But no matter how hard he tries, he is never successful. That is the irony of materialistic endeavor. All the endeavor for enjoyment just leads to frustration. And frustration leads to anger, disappointment. Living entity becomes unhappy in the material nature because of his wrong identity. He tries to enjoy and enjoy and enjoy, or he keeps on trying for enjoyment, but at the end of the day, what does he get? He simply gets suffering. But in his constitutional position, living entity is anandamaya. Living entity is joyful. So one who is joyful, he cannot tolerate suffering. Living entities do not want to suffer because that is not his position. In his constitution, a living entity is joyful. But what he gets, he is running after enjoyment. Enjoyment. Joy. He is running for joy. But what does he get? In the material nature, in spite of all his endeavor for enjoyment, he simply ends up suffering. And he hates it. Everyone hates suffering. And what is the ultimate suffering? The ultimate suffering is death. There can be no greater suffering than that. The ultimate suffering is death, where one simply has to leave everything behind. His senses are completely frustrated. His senses are forced to stop to function. His every single part of his body with which he is trying to enjoy coming to a full stop. And living entity hates it. But he can't help it. No matter how much he hates it, no matter how much everyone wants to avoid death, one cannot. Ultimately, everybody has to surrender to death or succumb to death. That is the ultimate suffering for a living entity. So, the perfect person is he who recognized his position as a spiritual being, as a spirit soul. He recognizes that the spirit soul is beyond this material nature. The spirit soul is non-material. In one of the first books that Srila Prabhupada published, Prabhupada explains that very beautifully in The Easy Journey to Other Planet. Prabhupada scientifically explained the spirit soul as antimatter. And actually that is a very wonderful way of understanding what the spirit soul is. We know what matter is. Now antimatter, opposite to matter, completely diametrically opposed to matter, is the spirit. You know the characteristics or qualities of matter. Now you just take the opposite of that. That is the quality of the spirit. Name a quality of matter. Who can think of some quality of matter? Please raise your hand.
It's enjoyable.
Matter is enjoyable? Okay, matter is ashat. Ashat means non-permanent. Temporary. So what is opposite to temporary? Eternal. So the spirit soul is eternal. You're about to say that same thing. Okay. Gross. Okay. Matter is gross. So what is opposite to gross? Not exactly subtle. Opposite to gross, like gross when it becomes finer, is subtle. But actually, what you mean by gross, the expression gross, is inert. Gross actually means inert. Now, what is opposite to inert? Opposite to inertness? Actually, opposite to inertness is consciousness. Conscious.
So inert means it doesn't have any consciousness. But opposite to that is consciousness. And another characteristic of matter, Gauranga Premananda said something, but I disagree with him. He said matter is enjoyable, but I would say matter is miserable. So, and what is opposite to misery? Opposite to misery is joy. Now you got the characteristics of spirit soul here from matter. In comparison to matter, we can understand what anti-matter actually is. So matter is temporary. Spirit is eternal. Matter is inert, spirit is conscious. Matter is miserable, spirit is joyful. And actually that is what we are. The spirit soul is Sat Chit Ananda. Now, the spirit is Sat Chit Ananda, so his craving, his desires, his wants and his needs are also spiritual. If spirit is, if the spirit soul is eternal, if the spirit soul is fully conscious, and if the spirit soul is fully joyful, then will the spirit soul be satisfied in an atmosphere where these things are never fulfilled? If the spirit soul, which is eternal, if he is forced to become temporary, how the spirit soul will feel? If you make someone, if you force someone to change his nature, how will he feel like? Like you like to breathe air. Now if you're forced to go inside water and breathe air, breathe water, how will you feel? Now you eat delicious food that is palatable to your tongue. But if you are forced to eat something that is unpalatable to your tongue, how will you feel? You'll feel miserable. So misery actually is to be forced to do something that you do not like. So the spirit soul's cravings are spiritual, but the spirit soul in its material nature is being forced to do things that is non-spiritual. So naturally he feels very, very miserable. And in this way, a spirit soul is suffering. A living entity is forced to suffer in this material nature. The arrangement of the material nature is, arrangement of Krishna in the material nature is, Krishna puts a living entity. Okay, you want to enjoy? Go ahead. Krishna gives the go. And the living entity feels, oh wonderful, now I can be Krishna. But more he tries to, as he tries to enjoy this material nature like Krishna, what does he get in return? The more he tries to enjoy, the more miserable he becomes. Therefore, to become really happy, it is very important to recognize one's spiritual identity. And to recognize one's spiritual identity means to recognize himself as a spiritual being. That I am spiritual. I am a spirit soul. And I am completely opposed to what the material nature is and what the material nature has to offer. So, and what does material nature offer? Here we find, since the material body is sure to be vanquished and the duration of one's life is not fixed, neither death nor life is to be praised. One should not be too much worried about life, of being alive, nor to death. That is what real wisdom actually is. Now Prabhupada is making one very nice point in the purport here. Prabhupada said that those who become too attached to death, they end up becoming a mayavadi. People, those who are too attached to death, they end up becoming a mayavadi. That is, they think that everything is illusory. Since ultimately everything is going to end, nothing actually exists. That is the root from, that is the root of their philosophy. So what do the Mayavadis say? Brahma Satta Jagan Mitha. The spirit is real, the spiritual nature is real, and this material nature is mitha. Why it is mitha? Because they realize or they feel that ultimately all their endeavor for enjoyment is going to come to an end. So since it's going to end, they say don't endeavor for any enjoyment in the material nature. Everything is mitha. And those who are too much obsessed with death, what do? They simply want to reject everything as illusory. And those who are too attached to life, what is their philosophy? Their philosophy is called Charvak philosophy. Charvak philosophy is that as long as you are here, you enjoy. Javat jivet, sukham jivet, rinam kritva, ghritam pivet. That as long as you are alive, you simply enjoy. Whether you have to beg or borrow or steal, you drink ghee. Ghritam pivet. So, either everything is meant for our enjoyment if we become too attached to life, or everything is illusory. Nothing is. Everything is mitha. Now, they are actually missing out on the main point. And the main point is that living entity is joyful. But that enjoyment, that joy is available only in the spiritual nature, not in the material nature. And how can one understand that? One understands that when he recognizes that he is a spirit soul. And then the consideration comes, then why are we suffering? Why we are going through all this? The answer to that is, it is Krishna's divine arrangement. So a devotee who is situated in perfect understanding, he never denies anything. He doesn't say that this jagat mitha. He says this jagat is very much real. And what do you get in this jagat? You get only suffering, and that suffering is real. This suffering is not mitha. Like actually the Mayavadi philosophy can be smashed in no time. Like Prabhupada makes an argument that if the jagat is mitha, then why don't you stand in front of a running train? Let's see how mitha the jagat is. Stand in front of a speeding train. It is mitha, the train is mitha. So why are you afraid of doing that? When a train comes, what do? Do you stand there thinking, well, this is mitha, this is mitha, and this is false? No, you run for your life out of the track. Actually, the suffering in this material nature is real. That's what we have to understand. That the suffering that we are going through is real. And it is our punishment. It is Krishna's punishment to us. Like a prisoner, if he goes to the prison and says, well, it's mitha, the prison is illusory, then will he learn the lesson? Why he is put into prison? Why is someone put into prison? For the crime. Once somebody commits a crime and he is punished and he suffers so that he realizes that he made a mistake by breaking the law. And when he suffers and realizes his mistake, then he says, well, I'm not going to break the law again. Similarly, this material nature is a prison house. And in this prison house, the living entities are undergoing various kinds of punishments. And those punishments are suffering. And an intelligent man will question, why am I suffering? Instead of thinking that this suffering is mitha, he will say, why am I suffering? This suffering is real. And that is about all I can get in this world. In this material nature, all I can get is suffering. I am meant to suffer. And what I am trying to enjoy, that enjoyment, the concept of enjoyment in the material nature is illusory. So if there is anything illusory in this material nature, then that is the desire for enjoyment in the material nature. The enjoyment in the material nature is illusory. But the suffering in the material nature is real. And why we are suffering? We are suffering due to our crime of breaking Krishna's law. We are a bunch of criminals. And this material nature is a place, is a prison house. So what can a prisoner expect in the prison house? Suffering. Besides suffering, can prisoner expect anything? Of course, nowadays, everything is turning topsy-turvy. Nowadays, the prison house is very comfortable. And somebody was telling me, is Harinarayan here? He was telling me in Spain, the prison house are so nice now that the prisoners don't want to come out. And when they come out, when they're told that, look, now you have to go out, your term is over, they say that, I don't want to go out. I'm enjoying here. I don't have to work. I get a place to stay. Nice place to stay. I get nice food to eat. Alcohol to drink, cigarette to smoke, TV to watch. But the prison authority says, no, 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 you have to go now. Your term is over. So the criminal says, okay, I'll come back soon. So instead of rectifying the consciousness of the people, this prison system in this world now is making more criminals. That's the unfortunate state of affairs in this age of Kali. And that's what happens in democracy. In democracy, when everybody has the freedom to do, or everybody has the right to cast a vote and elect a leader, then the leaders become servants to this mass. And they feel obliged to the mass. They feel the will. I mean, these people gave me the vote, and if I dissatisfy them, if I don't satisfy them, then they won't elect me again. So now let me do, let me give them whatever they want. And what do the foolish mass want? Ignorant mass want? They simply want all kinds of things that are bad for them and bad for the society. And that's why the society is just turning completely upside down. So, when a person realizes that there is only suffering in this material nature, and he considers, why am I suffering? That's actually one of the three Brahma Jigyasas. Why am I suffering? I don't want to suffer. Why am I suffering? And he gets the answer to that when he comes across a self-realized person. A self-realized person, either directly by speaking to him or through his books, like Srila Prabhupada did, made people understand that you are suffering because you have rejected Krishna. Now what to do? Okay, then find out what is the cause of your suffering, because you broke the law of Krishna. Now what should be done to rectify that? Simple answer. The answer is very simple. The solution is very simple. abide by Krishna's instructions. Instead of defying Krishna's instructions, just abide by Krishna's instructions. And what is Krishna's instruction? Krishna's instruction is surrender unto me. Sarvadharman parityajya mam ekam. It's a very, very emphatic instruction actually. Krishna is saying mam means to me, ekam means alone. He makes it very, very clear. Just me alone. Just surrender unto me alone. And then aham tvam sarvapapibhyo mokshayishami. Then I'll deliver you from all your crimes. All the crimes that you committed, all the sins that you have committed, I will deliver you from that. Don't worry about it. So if somebody really wants to be joyful, what should he try? He should simply surrender unto Krishna. And by surrendering unto Krishna,
one doesn't have to stop eating and sleeping or perform austerities and do stand on his head and walk on his hands and eat with his legs. No, it's not that. When one surrenders unto Krishna, he doesn't have to change his lifestyle. He simply, by surrendering unto Krishna, he can continue to do whatever he is doing. Only consideration is that he'll have to just surrender unto Krishna. Now the surrender unto Krishna also is not just a lip service. Krishna, I am surrendered unto you. And then I do whatever I want. Surrender unto Krishna means abide by Krishna's instructions. And Krishna's instructions are also very simple. Jat parosi, jadas nasi. Krishna is not saying that you stop your activities. But Krishna says that whatever you do for me. You can do, you can act. But act on my behalf. Jadas nasi. Krishna is not saying that you stop eating. Krishna says you eat, but you first offer it to me. So Krishna is not telling us to do anything, or rather Krishna is not telling us to stop doing anything. But Krishna is saying just there is a certain way of doing it. Jat karosi, jadas nasi, jat yuhasi, dadasi jat, jat tapushroshi kontiya, tat purusha manasa. Just surrender everything. You want to eat? Fine. Eat as much as you can. But just offer it to me. So that's the difference between a yogi and a devotee. You see, for a yogi he has to be very careful how he eats, how he sleeps. But a devotee's case is different. Devotee's understanding is akantu puriya karo prasad shoma. Eat only prasad. Prasad means first you offer it to Krishna and then it is Krishna's prasad. And how should you eat? Up to contour, up to your neck. So as much as you can stuff yourself, you eat. But then there is another consideration. Sarvakshan karo hari naam sham. Not only just eat and sleep. No, that's not the condition. You eat and then you chant Hare Krishna. Hari Naam Sankirtan. Congregationally, you chant. Then your prasadam will be digested. It will be spiritually digested by the process of Sankirtan. So Krishna consciousness is actually the perfect system that has been given by Krishna himself. And when one follows that process of Krishna consciousness, his life becomes joyful. When somebody becomes a devotee, he naturally becomes joyful. If he doesn't become joyful, then he must consider that something is wrong with him. Something is wrong with the way he is practicing. Just like when one eats, then he naturally feels satisfied.
and his body becomes strong. Now if somebody eats and he doesn't feel satisfied, then we have to understand that something is wrong somewhere. Probably he is not putting the food in the right place. Instead of putting it in the mouth, he is putting it in his ears. Or instead of food, he is taking something else. So if he is taking food and if he puts it in the right place, all he will have to do, just take the food and put it in his mouth. And the mouth will do the rest. Mouth will do the chewing, the mouth will do the swallowing, and then stomach will take care of digesting. Similarly, if the process of Krishna consciousness is properly executed, then the necessary result will be there. And what is the necessary result? What is the inevitable result of following Krishna consciousness? Anandamaya. Yeah. One becomes joyful. By following Krishna consciousness, one will become joyful. So if somebody doesn't become joyful after practicing Krishna consciousness, we have to understand that something is wrong. I was thinking of asking that whether you all are feeling joyful in Krishna consciousness, but then I thought better not to ask because you all are so humble that you won't ask me. But the understanding is there. Follow this process and it's guaranteed that you will get immortality, you will get full knowledge, and you will become joyful. Follow this process and these are guaranteed. Srila Prabhupada very mercifully gave this process of Krishna consciousness for everyone in this world to practice. So just follow this process and make your life successful. And the process is very simple. You simply have to chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, either in japa and in kirtan. Japa means for your own benefit, and kirtan means for yours as well as others' benefit. So do kirtan, chant the holy name of the Lord, preferably in sankirtan. Sammak kirtan, collectively you chant the holy name of the Lord with beautiful tune, and ecstasy will automatically be available. And follow the regulative principles. It is very important that one follows the four regulative principles. In the beginning it may be difficult, but if you continue to chant sincerely, you will see that it will become very easy to follow the regulations. Never ever stop chanting the holy name. Even if you have difficulties, don't stop chanting. Because by chanting, all the difficulties will disappear. And of the four regulative principles, I noticed that many devotees find difficulties with, the greatest difficulty is in controlling sex desire. Don't worry about it. Just continue to chant and Krishna will give you the joy of Krishna consciousness in such a way that a time will come when even the thought of sex life will make you disgusted. So disgusted that you'll spit at that thought. You'll think that how did I ever think of this? It will happen due to the supreme joy that is available in Krishna consciousness. Our relationship with Krishna is so divine, so sublime, that once that relationship begins to blossom, the desire for sex life will automatically be. Actually, sex desire is a perverted reflection of our love our love for Krishna in a perverted way becomes manifest in the form of trying to so-called love a woman, or for a woman trying to love a man. It's just a perverted reflection. That's why it's so disgusting. It's just completely opposite to what Krishna prema is. So just as running after the opposite thing, what do you get? What do you get? Misery. Right? Running for something that is opposite, you get misery. So be aware of one thing, that if you want to be miserable, then run after sex life. But those who want to be joyful, they should stay out of it. And spiritual life is based on celibacy. Spiritual life is based on abstaining from sex. Even for grihasthas, Prabhupada makes it, in the 12th chapter, Prabhupada makes it very, very clear that even a grihastha, even a householder in Krishna consciousness, one who is really sincere about spiritual advancement, should stay away from sex. Maybe it would be nice to read. Anyway, I can't find that particular purport.
And Brahmachari.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So,
a grihastha is not meant to enjoy sex life without restriction. Indeed, the whole purpose of Vedic life is to become free from sexual indulgence. All the ashramas are recognized for spiritual progress, and therefore, although the grihastha ashram gives a kind of license for sex life, for a certain time, it does not allow unrestricted sex life. Therefore, in grihastha life also, there is no illicit sex. A grihastha should not accept a woman for sexual enjoyment. Wasting semen is also illicit sex.
So in this way we can see that out of all the four ashrams, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha and sannyas are meant for restraining sex desire. And actually what I was looking for, the purport that I was looking for, that Prabhupada was clearly... Okay, here I got. Yeah, okay, Prabhupada is saying in the purport, to the verse 11 in the 12th chapter of the 7th canto. It is sometimes misunderstood that a grihastha, a householder, is permitted to indulge in sex at any time. This is a wrong conception of grihastha life. In spiritual life, whether one is grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyasi or brahmachari, everyone is under the control of the spiritual master. For brahmacharis and sannyasis, there are strong restrictions on sexual indulgence. Similarly, there are strong restrictions for grihasthas. Grihasthas should indulge in sex life only in accordance with the order of the Guru. Therefore, it is mentioned here that one must follow the orders of the spiritual master. Guru Bhittir Bikalpena. When the spiritual master orders, the grihastha may accept sex life. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 7.11. Dharma viruddha bhuteshu kamo ashmi. Indulgence in sex life without disobedience to the religious rules and regulations constitutes a religious principle. The grihastha is allowed to indulge in sex life during the period favorable for procreation and in accordance with the spiritual master's order. If the spiritual master's orders allow a grihastha to engage in sex life at a particular time, then the grihastha may do so. Otherwise, if the spiritual master orders against it, the grihastha should abstain. So this is actually done through the process of Garbhadhan Samskar. The Garbhadhan Samskar is performed by the permission of the spiritual master. So a person who is properly situated in spiritual life and who wants to make spiritual advancement should actually follow this process of indulging in sex life only for procreation. And procreation also, one doesn't indulge for procreation just whimsically. He actually selects the proper time, even the tithi, the day, the time, and he performs the Garbhadhan Sanskar, a particular Sanskar for procreation, and that Sanskar is performed with the permission of the spiritual. So this is how restricted the Vedic life actually is, and by following that life, one can go back to God. Okay, Hare Krishna, I will stop now. Thank you all very much. Jai Shri Prabhupada. Does anybody have any question?
So, one is not supposed to enjoy the senses, but then when it comes to eating prasanna, one is supposed to enjoy the stomach.
Okay, so one is not supposed to enjoy his senses, but when one is taking prasad, he is enjoying his tongue. No, I mentioned that not enjoy is not the philosophy of the Krishna consciousness. Philosophy of Krishna consciousness. But philosophy of Krishna consciousness is, don't try to enjoy the material realm. Spiritual enjoyment, there is no limit to it. Drown yourself in spiritual enjoyment. That is what Krishna consciousness is. Anandam buddhi vardhanam pratipadam purnam mitaswam. Anandam buddhi vardhanam, the ocean of ecstasy keeps on increasing. So who says no enjoyment? We say all enjoyment, but spiritual. And why go for material enjoyment when there is no enjoyment at all? Why, like a fool, run after a mirage when you are thirsty for water? Yes.
When you mentioned the question of why am I suffering, I think you mentioned the Sanskrit term. You said there are three.
Oh, Athato Brahma Jigyasa. Athato Brahma Jigyasa. One of the three.
And what are the other two?
Other two are, who am I, where did I come from, and why I am suffering. Okay, you keep your question for later, huh? I'll say another two questions because we're actually running late a little bit.
Maharaj mentioned that soul is also Satchitananda
in Brahma Jyoti Maharaj. No. Okay, the question is that you mentioned that soul is Satchitananda, but Brahma Jyoti is also Satchitananda. No. Brahma Jyoti is not Satchitananda. Brahma Jyoti is Sat, but hardly any Chit and no Ananda. So how can there be Ananda? Can one enjoy Ananda? Can one enjoy just by himself? No. To enjoy, you need others. Right? So in Brahma Jyoti, there is only you and nothing else. So if you are at a place where there is no one but you, then how can you enjoy there? So there is no Ananda in Brahma Jyoti. But in Golok Vrindavan, yes. Yes?
Okay. Personal experience, not in Roma, so opposite day, like the Medici is like four, but that Medici and that you come in the Roma Jordi, and the one who's to ask for the thing of us. Say, if one person is who reached already Roma Jordi, but once he's there, he resents himself, and he starts to pray Krishna. Possible that from there directly go to Vrindavan to Goloka, or you have to come down to the birth again?
Yes, if one is fortunate, then he may go through Brahmajyoti. But otherwise, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka. Even from Brahmajyoti, one has to come down to the earth plane, to the material. Because, you see, in Brahma Jyoti you can't perform devotional service. When you are alone, how can you render service to Krishna? Huh?
So, but if somebody is a devotee and he goes to Brahmajyoti, then he prays to Krishna, "Oh Krishna, please let me serve you. Let me be where you are present, and because there I can serve you. But here I can't serve you, and that's why it's such a miserable place to be in." Okay, so I'll stop now. Thank you all very much. All glories to Krishna.
Shri Radha Raman ki.